Good morning. Thank you, Dr. Thomason, Dr. Sparling, Professor Beauvais, distinguished speakers, and members of the audience. Good morning. I'm Philip Don, President of Campbell's Company of Canada, and it is an honor and a pleasure for me to be here today. I'd like to begin by thanking Laurette Dubé and the McGill World Platform for Health and Economic Convergence and the executive team for putting together this great initiative. After Laurette Dubé approached me to ask me if we would like to be here for this event, and while I went through the platform's information material, I realized that there were many convergence points between what the platform is aiming to do and what we as a team at Campbell Canada are hoping to accomplish. There was therefore no way that myself and my peers would ever miss this opportunity. Now, I also mentioned, you heard the little whoop at the beginning, my son Matthew is also a fourth-year economics student at McGill, so he's here, and his friend Jonathan. So if there's any heckling in the back, I attribute it to them. This morning, I'll try and introduce the food and nutrition security issue from the point of view of one company in the agri-food industry and to highlight why and how there are opportunities for business to become more involved. In tackling the food security issue, it's key to consider all of its dimensions: global food availability, food price inflation, an epidemic of obesity and diet-related chronic diseases across the world, and food safety issues. While Canada enjoys a diverse agricultural base, an innovative food processing industry, a strong food safety system, and universal health care, food security issues remain an important concern for the poorest and most vulnerable populations. There are several ways the strengths of the agri-food industry can be harnessed toward achieving food security. This could mean investing in R&D to be able to produce high-quality nutrition value at a price that all can afford. It could also mean helping to improve public knowledge about the functional properties of food, thereby simplifying healthier food choices. If we hope to achieve the sustained change that will enable us to achieve food and nutrition security worldwide, businesses will need to be part of the solution, and there is no better time than now. Now that we have started recovering from an economic crisis that highlighted the weaknesses of a financial system based on the pursuit of profit at any cost. Now that we have witnessed several years of investment in corporate social responsibility from companies across sectors, I personally believe that companies are now ready to take a further step and to explore new ways of doing business. As you heard, I'm here representing the Campbell Company of Canada. It'll be helpful to illustrate part of what I just mentioned by exploring the efforts that we as a team have been pursuing during the last number of years, the why and how we became aware that we could and should make a difference, and that's what we're aiming to achieve. I also must share, it was a bit intimidating to accept the invitation to be here with you today. In fact, when the request to participate came, we asked, why us? Suffering from a fairly long-standing inferiority complex related to our history as easy examples of high-sodium foods, we were quite tentative in accepting the engagement. As you will hear, we've trod a path of cautious and challenging steps over the last 6 years to bring us to a place where we feel much more credible and legitimate than in the past. And like the famous Sally Field acceptance speech for her 1984 Academy Award for the movie Places in the Heart, we feel like maybe you like us, you really like us. And we're thrilled that our baby steps have been registered. We've been on a journey to address gaps that we were creating in food and nutrition security that we will explore today. In researching this address, and I use that term rather generously, given that the fact that my Google search turned up 18,100,000 hits in 0.28 seconds, I rediscovered this is a varied, multifactorial, complex, and substantially widespread concern that has much attention, some action, yet according to what I gleaned, an underwhelming amount of systemic impacts that are the objective of this gathering. While researching this topic, I wasn't sure if this was food security, or if this was food security, or if this was food insecurity. But I do know, regardless, a picture of well-fed, clothed, and school children makes me happy regardless. With varied examples of food and nutrition security aside, I think we might be able to give some insights of how systemic changes occurred in Campbell Canada and illustrate how do you turn a proverbial battleship. I'd like to begin by sharing a few stories that triggered the sea change that took place in our company. The first one goes back when I first joined Campbell's almost 7 years ago. I was in Western Canada presenting to our number one Western customer, and we were there ostensibly presenting some new products. And the scene was a typical big boardroom, long boardroom, traditional. and the patriarch of this organization, the CEO, if you will, a gentleman named Norm Krivishan, was sitting at the end. And I was there presenting our new products, talking with some excitement about what was there. And he put his hand up and he said, "Stop." He said, "That's all very well what you're doing with those new products, but when are you going to?" And he picked up a can of our Campbell's tomato soup. He said, "But when are you going to take," he said, "the crap, but I'll say junk, the junk out of this?" And you can imagine the meeting kind of ground to a halt. And in the moment, I thought, how am I going to respond? And what was actually interesting was that what he said was true and that there were things we had to address. Unfortunately, what he didn't see was the fact that we had actually made some steps at that point. That particular formulation had the addition of an additional tomato in every can. But he couldn't see that because of the issues we had to address. So one very early story that started the wheels turning. The second is we went back to Campbell's a number of months after that, and we conducted a survey to see where we were as an organization. And a highlight came back that over 50% of our own employees were not serving our products to their own families. So you can imagine the effect that that had. And then to top it off, I had a customer talking about that we needed to change, our own employees needed to change. And then one Saturday afternoon, my wife and I were preparing a very nice, simple dinner with soup and sandwiches and serving it to our family. And my wife prepared the sandwiches, I prepared the soup, and I put the soup down and I put it down in front of my son, Matt. And Matt said, "Dad, is this your soup, Campbell's soup?" And I was like, "No, it's the competition soup, son, And he was very serious, and he said, "Well, actually, because our rowing coach at school said we shouldn't eat Campbell's products." So it came right home. So all those things actually created the momentum to change. And those real-life stories affected us, and it really showed that continuing as we were was not sustainable. In fact, the evidence numerically was there as well, as our soup household penetration was declining year after year for 10 years. For perspective, our canned soup business is almost 70% of our company's overall turnover. Clearly a core issue, and if unaddressed, would lead to a slow, almost imperceptible degradation. The hard and soft evidence was clear. However, inertia, paradigms, conservatism, lack of creativity, and fear were all in play, shackling the necessary courage it would take to change. Many charged that it would be impossible to develop soups at lower sodium levels, and that would still be acceptable to consumers. Some, many asserted that if we did make a change, it would be just like the new Coke. And that is the fear of failure personified and glorified in the food industry. Many reasons not to change. Taste is king, I heard over and over. However, recent surveys now demonstrate that nutrition and wellness have vaulted to the top of consumer selection criteria for foods. Consumers will, by and large, no longer trade off nutrition to get taste. If taste is king, nutrition is queen. And in my home, the queen calls almost all of the shots. What was present in our organization 6 years ago is fear. Fear of change, fear of tempting change, or that the change taken would not be perceived as enough and we'd still get criticized. Yet there were ample personal touch points that things had to move. Staying where we were, as I said, simply was not sustainable if you looked at it objectively. Our own challenge was about how to take this huge battleship with lots of fear. And how was it going to make a difference? How were we going to attempt to have a greater purpose? About how we were going to rebuff the very present and considerable fear along the way. We were models of one definition of food insecurity. Unsustainable food with unsustainable nutrition attributes with unsustainable community negative inertia. If there was an article on sodium, the red Campbell can was front and center, an easy mark for the critics and evaluators. So reducing sodium was going to be a tough challenge. How are we going to address it? What was the change point? How did fear get released in our company? The first step was making the change very personal, leveraging those stories of what no change would bring. No change would bring more of the same, some quiet desperation. Each of our employees have heard some version of the story of Campbell's, "Oh yeah, good, I ate your soup as a kid, but it has too much sodium for me now." Basically, good was not standing up in the minds of many consumers. We had to become great for our families. Coming out of our own stories and realization that we had concerns with bringing our products home to our own families, we started with a pledge to make food that would be proud to serve our own families. We had to do this to make the change point personal, visceral, and have a very familiar and powerful face. How was our manifestation of food and nutrition security initiated? One of the turning points, if you will, speaking of the battleship, was our attendance at a presentation given to the food industry by Dr. Andrew Pipe of the Ottawa Heart Institute. Dr. Pipe has an uncanny ability to render the complex into simple, genuine, and accessible understanding. In addressing the food industry regarding its challenges in a new world of health and wellness, Dr. Pipe issued three challenges. Make the healthy choice the easy choice, do the right thing, and don't be clever. How many of you smiled inside of the last one? That last one cuts right to the core of responsibility. How many times has hyperbole hijacked the agendas in organizations and buried the honest and authentic intentions? I felt it. I had lived those moments in my career when I was just a little too clever. Those three statements, armed with our own stories and experience, set the cat amongst the pigeons and helped lay the foundation for change within Campbell Canada. Our start was a bold step. To create belief, first internally, we reduced 10% of sodium across the board. No research, no testing, a somewhat regarded as cavalier move. It was done to build belief that we were serious. Action. Coincident with the step to reduce 10%, we assembled our leadership team, shared our personal values and hopes for what the company could do to make us believe that impossible could be achieved, that we could make a difference and, quote unquote, raise the bar for ourselves and industry overall. We gathered to articulate our hopes, our most meaningful work contexts, and to strike a vision for a future that held tension and promise. Following a series of sessions where we explored where we were and where we wished to be, we each brought a personal perspective to contribute to the assembling of a vision statement to express our desire to advance food and nutrition security. In November 2003, we declared ourselves to be at stake with a company vision for extraordinary, authentic nourishment for all. Five words to act as our guide. Extraordinary in that consumers had, until that point, generally expected less than they ever had in the past. They had come through the eras of oat bran and potato chips, trans fat and reputed healthy baked goods, and yes, even high sodium and canned foods. We intended to surprise, exceed expectations, and encourage consumers to begin to believe again, bit by bit. Authentic is intended to be honest, open, real, no artificial ingredients. What you expect to be present in the product is, and what you wouldn't expect isn't. And what was not in our pantry at home wasn't going to go into our formulations. Authentic was an intention to, over time, render our company and our products more credible and legitimate so that we could aspire to move from addressing negatives to moving towards adding nutrition positives. Authentic also became the way that we as a team intended to be in our relationships, discussions, and interactions internally and externally. Nourishment was all about being sure that the foods we made nourished wholly, without former downsides such as high sodium or trans fat levels. If we were providing two or three servings of vegetables, they could no longer be paired with an obvious or hidden downside. Nourishment was what we also intended to provide to our teams, nourishing careers and challenges. And finally, we recognize that our foods cut across virtually all socio and economic demographics because you could purchase many of our soups for 79 to 99 cents. They were available to all. Our annual household penetration of over 750 million cans of soup had over 95% households stocking one or more of our products. Our products were accessible and affordable to all. We intended to make them better for everyone, even for those who perhaps didn't have the knowledge to know what was or wasn't good for them. We feel that we have a responsibility to make our products secure because they are inexpensive. While many other products offer assurance at what are often inaccessible price premium levels, ours weren't that way. And implicitly, if we were committed to make products that we were proud to serve our own families, we had the same responsibility to do so for our communities. Based on where we were in 2003, there was considerable fear, tension, and opportunity in that bold and risky 2003 vision intention of extraordinary, authentic nourishment for all. We found a true passion within our work, a work that some might characterize as mundane or of little importance. But we felt deeply that this was a critical step to take not only for corporate sustainability, but also for that of our own personal drive and engagement. That passion and accepting it as such was key. We had enough fear to last generations of soup makers. And as a good friend of mine who's here today says, passion creates things that fear will never see. We sense that with our scale, we could have the temerity to dream that we could make a meaningful difference, to have a purpose just beyond making soup, to be passionate social contributors in our small slice of the pie, but to do so on a scale that could generate impact. The notion of scale for tipping larger and more systemic change is key. The point tipped with Campbell Canada stepping forward. Our move served to catalyze efforts to reduce sodium within the Canadian packaged food market. We were what, at many whispered, was the bleeding edge. There was a message that had to get out, and even if the language to express it authentically, free from cynicism, was yet to be articulated. You know, until we were surprisingly asked to be here today, we were formerly the sodium high sodium enemy, as I mentioned, we didn't know that we were embarking on a path of what may characterize as representative of social capitalism. We just knew we had to do the right thing. And for us, it's the thing that is right more so in your soul, if you will, than in your head. For us, this was to go from dreaming to doing, from just thinking to acting. Small, trepidatious steps at first, but moving toward the intention set in a way that others could see you meant it. Not thinking to question, or thinking to fear what happens if it doesn't work, or thinking to criticize, or thinking to analyze what is, or thinking about what they might think of us, or thinking to feel good about what we knew, but thinking to do and putting action into our purpose. Action Man. We had many reasons to think a lot about all other things than action, as our key challenge was reducing sodium, probably the easiest, cheapest, most effective way of creating a savory impact in foods. And savoriness is one of the most primal elements of appetite. You may know that many assert that appetite is controlled largely by the limbic system, and I realize it's a bit early, and you've all just had breakfast, but here's a picture of the limbic system. As I understand it, the limbic system is the primitive or old brain. If we were intending to mess around with sodium, we were right up there with the fight or flight response. We were picking a fight with the amygdala, the fornix, the pineal gland. Evidence in past attempts suggested it would be too hard to try and reduce sodium. We couldn't teach that old dog brain new tricks. And tricking it was not something we could do with artificial ingredients. So even in the context of the limbic system, we had more than ample reason to not try, to not do. Some did say that, okay, we'll try and reduce the sodium. But as our old and wise friend from Star Wars says, do or not do, there is no try. For us to change was significant action in the areas that can drive scale change. Those require significant collaboration. At the beginning, we were on our own as the sodium pariahs. Even our own Campbell employees had significant reservations. Imagine that of external collaborators. When we set our vision intention, we heard the sound of the proverbial one hand clapping. The first step to reduce 10% sodium we did on our own, and I can add a significant risk internally. Up to that point, our formulations were regarded as secret recipes, unmutable, not open to change. And you certainly didn't want to mess with any component of taste. As I said, no new Cokes on our watch. So the first step was alone, but together as a team. That first step opened us up to generate the initial belief internally and with our first external collaborators, the Heart and Stroke Foundation, and the Ottawa Heart Institute. These organizations began to consult and collaborate with us at some perceived risk to their own reputations. How could you work with them? Would be questions that they would have to answer. Our 10% step let them see that although we weren't perfect and far from it at that point in time, that we meant what we said. Their early collaborators, in our case, became most of our most honest, authentic advisors and critics, but most importantly, our cheerleaders. Too often, and we've experienced this, a step in the right direction is often seized and minimalized as too little, or not enough, or a drop in the bucket. And what you still have to do gets magnified, occluding the real progress that's been achieved. This for us is a key change, and one that we suggest is essential in creating scale change in food and nutrition security. Organizations like our own fear that well-intentioned steps will be criticized, thereby demotivating and destabilizing the very change that they're designed and they want to change and affect. The model has to change to achieve greater security in packaged food, at least as it relates to our experience. Heart and Stroke Canada and the Ottawa Heart Institute cheer-led Campbell onto the extent that the work we've done was acknowledged by Blood Pressure Canada with a certificate of excellence, the first given to a food company. The stimulus, enthusiasm, and driving motivation to do even better was fired, galvanized, and accelerated by a simple, "You're on a good path. Continue on that path. You can do it. We're with you." For us, with that acknowledgement, there was no looking back. The impact thus far? Today at Campbell Canada, we have almost 50% of our sales now in foods that have 480 milligrams of sodium per serving or less. In many cases, virtually half of the sodium levels per serving of 5 years ago. And along the way, we've added more whole grains, more vegetables such as extra tomatoes to our famous tomato soup, to many of our products. A simple cheer changed and energized the course. There's more to be done. We're still working to convert our formulations. Knowing that each formula takes approximately a minimum of 12 weeks to improve, our over 100 soup products require almost 24 person years. Over the last 5 years, we've committed that amount of time and significant financial resources as well to deliver the levels we have today. It's a big job that requires patience and impatience, which we both received from Heart and Stroke Canada and our input from Dr. Pipe. We're now stepping to the opportunity that positive nutrition brings for food and nutrition security. With our portfolio of foods rendered now more credible and legitimate with sodium reduction, we can now authentically pursue nutrition improvements. Yet this is proving, from a regulatory standpoint, as challenging, if not more, as removing the negatives. However, one live, exciting initiative in the spirit of food for all is our launch this fall of 13 gluten-free and 13 halal-certified soups. With these products, we'll be providing convenient, accessible food to two communities we could not serve previously. I think the recipe to achieving the next level of Campbell food and nutrition security for all will be similar to the one that brought us today. It starts with recognizing and embracing where you are. Addressing the current state in an open, honest, and authentic way with a subcurrent of fomenting the case for change. That needs to be followed with the creation of a vision of what can be. That vision needs to have tension and opportunity. That vision needs to be compelling, easy to articulate, easy to remember and recall, and possessing of a better end state for more than just yourself. It has to have a deeply embedded greater purpose. And it has to be a filter for your future decision points. For this was, is that choice really extraordinary, authentic nourishment for all? The next step is to ground that vision in people, ground it in a concrete, proximate way that one can feel. Get involved with it. Make it personal, with personal stories and evidence points. With these, you can create visceral connection points to keep efforts alive when challenges come. Stir the knowledge and confidence that we can do it. We will do it. We can accomplish this challenge. Others are counting on us to motivate their leadership. And then align that vision and that purpose clearly through your strategies and actions. Then open yourself up to collaborators. Build open and authentic dialogues with them so that they can know your intentions and see past old paradigms and conventions. Encourage cheerleading. When others say, "You can do it and we are with you," keep it going and acknowledge your efforts. Your energy and determination double. These cheers alone, as I said, will vanquish fears. Finally, it's essential to celebrate. Celebrate heartily when you've conquered your own doubts and human barriers. I know that our own team, we didn't do enough of this, and sometimes the energy to rebound from challenges was occasionally tough. But this is how we boarded the path that we're on, and as I said, we're still on it. In the context in which we operate, the future opportunities in driving food and nutrition security are simple obstacles that, from our perspective, need a new approach, a new paradigm. Up to now, the entry point to effecting change has been primarily an adversarial one. That is, to gather expert evaluators to set regulated levels for what have been deemed as undesirable ingredients, a step well-intentioned with a goal to improve health or safety. The result of evaluations have sometimes, regretfully, resulted in sensationalistic, sniping criticism. From my personal point of view, the awarding of derisive recognitions such as the Salt Lick Award to companies or industries that have high sodium does little to motivate and encourage the case for change. For me, these type of awards are the manifestation of intentions gone wrong. It does no one good. It encourages few to affect change. because in their minds, the die has already been cast. You can't win for trying. It is what we sometimes felt as we took small steps forward. If we did this, well, we didn't do that. And look over there, there are other gaps. The demonization of the food industry at large is old territory. My view is that as far as that tactic is concerned, it's time to move on. Rather than spending the administrative energy to evaluate, standardize, regulate, and hold to acceptable levels undesirables based on population targets, why not encourage more liberal and focused access to components that can address major current and future health issues? Generating recommended levels of ads can be so much more powerful. Custom solutions, flexible levels, as biology is not homogeneous, and culture and sociology play a large part in food choice. Addition of vitamin D, reinforcement of antioxidants, bioactives, more whole grains, vegetables, et cetera, encouragement to do is key. Partnering to bring new components and combinations in more readily accessible forms will create the space of prosperity for all. There's a collective and clear need for more health in our lives. We know that by 2020, there will be twice as many over 50-year-olds as there are today. And we also know that by 2015, the world will have approximately 1.5 billion chronically malnourished, 1 in 10. Focusing on realities such as these and developing new foods will translate into improved system economics, both for food manufacturers and healthcare. For this type of model to be the norm, industry must, as I said, must be supported and provoked in collaboration with public health interests, regulators, nutritionists, dietitians, scientists, agriculture leaders, sociologists, psychologists, and the like. Open networks driving open knowledge and action need to be present. Additionally, and part of the theme of the think tank, the focus on generating profit as a determinant to creating nutrition breakthroughs for societal benefit may also need to be viewed with a different lens. I personally was impressed with Isidore Sharp of Four Seasons Hotels' mantra. He says, bring them value and they will give you profit. These shifts need to happen. As we can see, approaches to date have been nominally effective. Food, appetite, and diet modification, as I said, are multifactorial issues that cannot be dealt with within the context of acceptable or approved upper tolerances or rigorous financial requirements. The shocking rise of obesity in both the industrial and sadly non-industrial worlds is visceral evidence of the failure of current interventions. Will the move to more positive steps be driven by profit considerations? Yes and no. Yes, in that organizations have accountability to financial stakeholders, and no, in that not addressing obvious issues, and I use sodium levels from our reference point, has and will lead to ultimately unsustainable business for stakeholders. For our organization, this was manifest in household penetration declines for our core canned soup business. Following changes made that I discussed, we now have growth in our base business. So collaborative, provocative partnerships can work. It's worked in our case. By having partners in alignment with us, those that weren't forcing convergence into one solution, gave us the space to see that we could advance over time and with support, rather than judgment. This is a new model. Each partner bringing their common core intentions, passions, and diversity and unique creativity to the table, rather than a situation calling for compliance and control. Will there be some cases where seemingly aligned partners will disappoint you? Yes, that'll happen. They'll disappoint the communities that you wish to serve, just like we sometimes disappoint ourselves, disappoint our spouses or partners, our children or colleagues. It's part of the risk of exploration. We're human. As it said, the spirit is often willing, but the flesh is weak. My encouragement, our encouragement, in the face of that reality, is to press on regardless, acknowledging both the frailty of the human spirit and its incredible potential when encouraged. I think that this is the key to breaking out of the current models of much thinking, yet less than ideal action. See intention and stoke it, fuel it. The flame may flicker from time to time, but stay the course and encourage more. Inviting our team here today has encouraged us, challenged us, and stimulated us that we can continue to aspire to do more. And we are here to open ourselves to that opportunity. Part of our approach is to continue to seek stimulus and also to mobilize engagement of our own teams as well. I mentioned earlier the initiation of our vision of extraordinary, authentic nourishment for all, and how it pulled us to capabilities we didn't realize we were capable of. As we've advanced our ambitions into the goal of becoming Canadians' most desired food choice for healthy living, and packaged food, I mean, we've also understood that there was the space to reflect many underpinning intentions within the definition of healthy living. What I'd like to share as I move to close this morning is our latest work that has re-energized our broader internal community to bring some of our internal aspirations out into society overall. In working with teams across Campbell Canada, we've created our new beliefs. 10 statements that capture many of our intentions and desires for the communities in which we participate. We now have teams that have found a particular passion for one of the beliefs. The short term, our teams have become energized around what we can do. Most recently, our program entitled Help Hunger Disappear, in conjunction with Food Banks Canada, has many Campbell team members volunteering their personal time. We're not sure exactly where this will lead. Maybe you'll be able to help us. But we feel excited by the possibilities in declaring and sharing the beliefs. How ambitious can we become? Not so sure, but we have evidence that we can do more and have greater impact. I'd like to share a short video of our beliefs and reinforce that the team I'm here with today, the leadership team of Campbell Canada, is ready to explore how we might work with you to bring these beliefs to life. Thank you, Marie.
Five years ago, Campbell Canada adopted a bold vision: extraordinary, authentic nourishment for all.
Our vision is fueled by the passion and commitment to become a partner in every Canadian's journey to healthy living.
Today, we crystallize our core intentions with the following beliefs.
We believe in being committed, active partners and advocates of healthy living.
We believe that making healthy food choices should be simple enough for all to understand.
We believe that when real food is made affordable and convenient, balancing life's challenges is often easier.
We believe and embrace the role that food plays in connecting and nourishing our diverse communities.
We believe that we should all know where our food comes from and how it is made.
We believe that we all need to reconnect with the value of responsible farming and the role it plays in healthy living.
We believe that good food is real food, and that real food is safe food.
We believe that cooking simple and nourishing meals is a tradition that must be shared.
We believe that we are responsible for what we take from the earth and what we put back into it.
We believe that food should be real, free from artificial colors, flavors, and ingredients.
We believe access to healthy food is a right, and because of who we are and what we make, we must take a lead role in helping to alleviate hunger. Our hope is that you will choose us as your most desired food choice for your healthy living journey.
We look forward to working with you and the many communities Campbell Canada touches to transform these beliefs into realities.
Taking into consideration the principles discussed, working towards achieving food security from our point of view as a company in the agri-food business means being increasingly curious about finding ways to further integrate corporate social responsibility into our business model. That model is focused on being able to produce the highest nutritional quality and food quality accessible at an affordable price. One of the things that we've been working on, trying to develop a notion of what we call the uncompany company, in which we're not only aiming to achieve economic results, but also a social conscience and a collaborative sensibility as well. There exists a risk for a company to conduct such a strategy. For example, a line needs to be drawn as to what extent a company can share best practices with its competitors. But there's also great potential for collaboration. Campbell Company of Canada has formally engaged in that direction, so this is part of what we're aiming to achieve. I believe that in order to accomplish any change in an industry, we need to question ourselves as to what is the long-term value. We've entered in an age in which if you bring value, the marketplace will bring you profit. If you strictly pursue profit and do so in an exploitive or careless way, this new tuned-in and informed marketplace is going to call you out. This old model is still highly represented within many industry players. So the goal is to convince, to cheerlead, if you will, one company at a time to become involved and create a movement that can engage them all. Looking ahead, I think that there is a great opportunity for all actors of our industry to join efforts and consolidate the positive actions for greater change that we currently each conduct within our own networks. As for example, while exploring the opportunity for a new business model within our Canadian division, some elements of the approach that we undertook in Campbell Canada made their way to Campbell Soup Company in the U.S., thus generating opportunities for a global reach. There is so much that can be accomplished by stretching out individually and then reaching out collaboratively, not to just think, but to do, to try and overturn convention. I'm back to Sally Field. Oh, okay, that didn't work. We'll go right to the last slide. So just to leave you with one quote, Seneca, the Roman philosopher, said, "It is not because things are difficult that we do not dare. It is because we do not dare that they are difficult." Thank you very much for your support and encouragement this morning, and I wish you all a great think tank. Thank you.
Thanks for a perfect talk for starting this. Dave Sparling from the Ivy Business School. Phil, I'm quite interested in your comment on adding nutritional elements and components to food and some of the challenges that you're facing. You sort of glossed over that one because you had a lot more important messages. But I am quite curious because a lot of companies in Canada are really running up against that. And I wonder specifically, what are you experiencing? And also, what kind of things would you recommend might make your job easier from that respect?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's been a historical challenge in trying to advance fortification in Canada. I think for lots of good reasons, good intentions, we do take the precautionary principle, and that has hamstrung some efforts to actually add genuine value and legitimacy. We have a project right now that I can't go into too much detail on, but it's a project whereby we're able to take food and have it undergo a very natural process that increases the natural amount of a vitamin. So natural process that nature has built into the food. Yet when we do go and discuss with folks in Ottawa, that's fortification. Can't do that. So even though the intention again is to try and render these foods better for all in a very natural way, if the outcome is that there's an elevated level of a natural vitamin, that, again, based on the precautionary principle, creates some concern. And why we were interested in those things is because by using some of the processing elements that we have, we can bring some of these vitamin levels at literally pennies a serving, rather than, you know, folks having to go out and spend $8, $9 for a bottle of vitamins. The ones that are, you know, currently at a level of under fortified.
Mm-hmm. Hi, good morning. I enjoyed your presentation very much. I'm Mary Labbe, and I'm from University of Toronto, but as you know, I'm working with the Sodium Working Group in Canada. And I guess I want to ask you a question. Campbell's is held up with sodium as both in two hands, one, a company that had, say, a good ways to go in terms of the sodium challenge, but also one who addressed it head on and started making some progress. And I guess I wanted to say, if you were to give some advice to the Sodium Working Group, because we're struggling with, you know, how do we get a whole food industry to move to somewhere different, what key message would you want to tell us in terms of that, you know, reflects the reality of what you're facing in, you know, getting there? Because I think none of us want to let the challenge slip, but, you know, what advice would you want to tell us?
I think one would be, you know, what I revealed in the presentation, that is, it can be so incredibly motivating to just have a cheer, to say, well done, you made this change over here, and it's not where we want you to go, but that's a great change. And that will provide the internal motivation, because if you look at, I guess, the social conscience of employees now in organizations, they want to work for an organization that's doing good. And if you will provide them with the cheer, they're going to create the motivation and the impetus internally. So, you know, once we took the step on 10% in Campbell, Canada, you know, we had people in our R&D team saying we have to do more, people in our marketing team we have to do more, people in our manufacturing facility saying we need to do more. So that's really critical. And I think we sometimes tend to overlook the nature of, you know, of human nature. You know, the carrot is always better than the stick. That would be one. I think the other one is working to understand how biology plays roles in the levels of sodium that could be perceived as being essential to health, and focus on those, and then have a discussion with the company saying, here are the pitfalls of going beyond that. And then I think where there are formulation challenges would be to give time for companies to determine what needs to be changed to get those levels down, because as I said, it is extremely, extremely difficult. And when you have a commitment to not add artificial ingredients, it makes it more so of a challenge, because there are components and companies out there that can create components that will mimic the salt or sodium impact, but they're not natural. And we want to stay in that notion. You know, basically, soup has natural ingredients. We want to stay as close to that. So those are three things I think would be critical.
Thank you.
Gordon Bacon with Pulse Canada. In your presentation, you talked about the importance of improving the nutritional profile, and you also mentioned your company's interest and focus on corporate social responsibility and the environmental side. We all have the nutrition label to sort of judge where we're at from a nutritional perspective. Do you have any thoughts you want to share in terms of your company's focus on sort of measurement on the environmental sustainability side of ingredients?
Okay, thank you. Actually, an area that and we feel, again, is part of a commitment to food and nutrition security, that how we make our products is critical to track. And we've struck a team, I think it was approximately 9 to 12 months ago, that's focusing specifically on that. In terms of hard measures at this point, we know that we have a target internally for reducing our water usage. Obviously, in making soup and washing vegetables, we use a large amount of water. We've had a significant reduction there, and we continue to set higher targets for that. And even going back to the last question, one of the great encouragements was there was, if you noticed in the slide, that we received a green award from the City of Toronto for a reduction in sodium and in a reduction of water usage. And that's only, again, spurred on our efforts. So we do have targets. Energy usage is important, as well as reducing our usage of water. So we have set that. It's an area that we're stepping into more now. We want to focus on really the number one job for us was getting the food right. And then we can then move on to that next step of dealing with how we make our foods. The thinking being, if we didn't address the food itself, it would be somewhat inauthentic to talk all about our environmental efforts. So we wanted to get the food right first, become credible and legitimate there first, and then step out as we have in a number of these different beliefs. It's really an ambition that we have of wanting to go into the external community and say, how can we advance what we're doing even more through collaboration?
Okay, we have time for one more question.
Just a quick question. Robert Peterson from the European Agriculture and Health Consortium. What I'd like to ask is, this is Campbell's Canada strategy, and I'd like to ask how this strategy feeds into a global strategy or your strategy in other countries.
Mm-hmm. As I said, one of the things that was a wonderful outcome of the risky steps that were taken in Campbell, Canada, was it encouraged and provided evidence to the U.S. organization they could also tentatively lower sodium levels in some of their ICON soups. So once we had made the step, a couple of years after, the U.S. organization then went through a program of reducing sodium in their levels as well. So that's been now moved globally, and it's something that's happening. So it's an example of what, you know, often people talk about Canadian organizations as being innovation incubators for their U.S. or global parents, and we've been able to do that. I think one other thing that was helpful was, again, the notion of having a vision of extraordinary athletic nourishment for all. Seemed, you know, where Campbell's was 6 years ago, that was definitely a stretch. But subsequent to that, the whole notion of nourishing became part of the global vision of nourishing people's lives everywhere, every day. So we have had that impact, and the team's, you know, quite tickled pink when that happened. So it can happen, and I think, you know, Canada itself is a unique community, and I think the Canadian networks that are present here can really affect massive change. So we could probably get everybody important in a room this size and create the systemic change that's necessary.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.